This Two Lectures episode features writer, filmmaker and adversity expert Charlie Engel, recorded live at the global event in Cardigan, West Wales in 2019.
My name is Charlie Engel and I'm here to tell you stories that illustrate the one real guiding principle in my life, and that is this simple idea that what happens to us isn't nearly as important as what we choose to do about it. When I was 29 years old, my first son, Brett, was born, and I thought he was going to save me, because at that point in my life, I'd been a hardcore drug addict and alcoholic for 12 years, and I had tried everything to quit. Nothing had ever stuck. I just couldn't do it. And I thought that his birth, just him being alive, was actually going to change all of that. I remember holding this tiny little baby and feeling love and emotions that I just didn't think I was capable of, because frankly, as an addict, I thought I was broken, that I wasn't entitled to or able to feel those kind of deep emotions. I didn't deserve it. So for the first time in my life, I had this place to put that, and I had someone that was willingly giving those feelings back to me. And for the first time, I think ever, I had great hope. And I felt really strong. And I can't actually explain what happened next, but not too long after that, after his birth, I found myself in the worst part of town again, a place I'd been many times. And at the end of a really just horrible six-day binge, I'm sitting on the ground and I'm handcuffed, hands behind my back, and the police are going through my car, and there's three bullet holes in the vehicle. And those had been put there by somebody who was trying to shoot me, like it wasn't an accident. And I'm sitting there watching the police actually search my vehicle. And this policeman reaches under the driver's seat, and he pulls out this glass pipe. And he turns, and he looks at me, and he shakes his head in that admonishing way. And I felt ashamed. And any rational, sane person at that point would have thought, oh my God, I'm in some serious trouble now. And all I could think was, so that's where that was. I've been looking for that for days. It's like, I wonder if there's anything left in there. It's like, so needless to say, I was a very sick human being at this point. And strangely, even at the end of that 6 days without any sleep and just all the things I'd put my body through, I had the clearest thought that I had ever had. And that was, Brett can't save you. Nobody is coming to save you. Like, the only chance you have is to save yourself. And at that moment, I realized I had a decision to make. And that choice was between living and dying. And I chose running. That night, I went to an AA meeting, and which I had been to them before. But I had never gone with the true intention of quitting. I had always gone searching for some way to manage my drinking or manage my drug use. And this time I went because I was done. I wanted to quit. I got up the next morning, I put on my running shoes, and I ran. And that pattern is what I did for the next 3 years. Every single day I went to a meeting, and I ran without missing a single day for those 3 years. And I slowly began to build a life for myself. In that 3 years, I actually ran like 30 marathons. Because clearly I had that whole addiction thing under control. And like, and people did. They challenged me. They're like, yeah, you just changed addictions. I'm like, fuck you. But I did have to think about it. You know, I had to at least take into consideration what they were saying to me. But it took a while to figure out. Addiction is all about hiding. It's about being invisible. It's about having no feelings. Running was the exact opposite of that for me. There was no hiding. So hiding in a marathon or in a 100-miler or whatever. I mean, you feel absolutely everything, and I was fully present the whole time. And what I realized was during that time period, what I was trying to do by running so hard every single day, it was like trying to take a scalpel and cut the addict out of me. Like, I wanted that person gone. And it took those 3 years to figure out that the addictive part of my nature is all the best things in me. Like, without that part of me, I wouldn't be good at anything. So it was a matter of taking that energy, that power, and pointing it towards something that was useful, towards something that was powerful and helpful, and it changed everything for me. And what I also found in running was the lesson that we actually all know. Everything important happens in the hardest times in our lives. Nobody ever gets to the end and says, oh my God, my life was so easy. I learned so much from all the things that just came my way. We have to fight our way through this life and find those lessons. And for me, running helped give me a place to do that. And so I started to say, okay, how far can I go? And I started running 50 milers and 100 milers. And I started running across deserts. I ran across the Gobi Desert and the Atacama Desert and the Amazon jungle and the jungles of Vietnam and Borneo. And I just began to have a lot of fun, basically. And I wanted to see just how far I could go. This was in Yosemite. And I was in the Amazon jungle, and it was a 7-day race across the Amazon, and every day was like Tour de France, so it was a stage race. And so every day we had some time off at the end of the day. And this guy, who I'd never met before, says to me, as we're both swinging in our jungle hammock, staying off the ground, and he says, you know, I wonder if anyone's ever run all the way across the Sahara Desert. And I literally said to him, that is the dumbest idea I've ever heard. But interestingly, you know, words said to us by a stranger can change the course of our entire lives. It might happen here at Dew while you're here. So I went home and I couldn't stop thinking about this idea of running across the Sahara. So I started to do some research and I found out that in fact no one had ever run across the Sahara Desert. Go figure. And firsts in the adventure world are really hard to come by. And so I began to tell people with no real evidence that I could do it that I was going to be the first person ever to run across the Sahara Desert. Anybody that I could get in touch with for 5 minutes, I would tell them that this is what I was doing. And people would tell me, that's a wonderful idea. It's impossible. It's too hot. There's no way to get resupplied. It's just not possible. You know, it's a cool idea. And I felt myself that every time they said that, I began to let those people own the impossibility, and I took full possession of everything that was possible. Because it's the easiest thing in the world to be a critic and to tell someone else that they can't do something. And I told the story often enough that I finally told the right person. I was working for a TV show called Extreme Makeover Home Edition at the time, and this guy comes up to me. I think he was just sick of hearing my story. He's like, look, if you'll shut up, I'll introduce you to a director friend of mine. A guy named James Mall, and James had won the Academy Award for Best Documentary a few years earlier. And I said, yes, I would love to meet him. I show up late, I give the worst pitch in history, and at the end of it, he stands up and puts out his hand and says, yes, I would love to make a film about this adventure. A week later, he calls and he says, look, I've just hung up with Matt Damon, and Matt would like to executive produce and narrate this film. Would that be okay with you? I said, well, I was really hoping for someone better. But sure, Matt Damon would do just fine. And so I now have two Academy Award winners attached to a film about running across sand. And a year later, there I am in the Sahara with my team, and we're looking at these maps, and everyone is so excited about this adventure, and all I can think is, I have suckered all of these people to the Sahara Desert, and we are all going to die. Like, there is simply no way to do this. There's no book. I'm like, okay, what do I do on day 10? And so we get a week into this adventure, and we hit sandstorms, and we got lost, and we ran out of food and water. Two of my support people quit. The entire expedition, a week into it, had fallen apart. My two teammates were on IVs. It was 140-degree ground temperatures every single day in Mauritania, and we were melting. And I realized, though, that I had been focused for so long on getting this adventure done, on getting to the finish line, and I had forgotten the lesson of sobriety, which is the same one we all know. It's one day at a time. And so I woke up on day 8, and all I focused on that morning was running a marathon before lunch. And then I took a little break. I had some food. I took a nap, and I got up, and all I thought about was running another marathon before dinner. And at night, I took my thin foam mat and I put it on the sand and I lay there and I looked up at a billion stars because there wasn't an electric light within 500 miles. And I gave thanks for the fact that I was out there suffering and alive and getting a chance to experience this amazing thing. And one day at a time, we made our way across the Sahara Desert. And here's a little bit of what that looked like.
You can do this. You don't want to quit.
It's okay.
We saw a young boy, 7 or 8 years old, in the desert alone, fending for himself while his dad was a 2 days walk away to get water. That's the water situation. I mean, it's so much bigger an issue than I would have ever thought.
Narrated by executive producer Matt Damon and directed by James Maul, a personal and compelling journey into the world's most mysterious wilderness.
The purpose of the three of us coming here was to learn more about each other, to learn about the people of the Sahara, and to do something that hasn't been done before.
They all three agreed that if one runner went down, they would be out of the expedition.
I thought your commitment was different than that.
When is the end?
The end is when we get to Cairo.
When Africa is one, and we sing this song, show me the way home. Oh, I, show me the way home. It don't hurt no more.
It will be a life-changing experience, and not just for the three runners, for everybody who's along on this journey.
So we made it. And thank you. And so just to give you a little scope, so basically we ran 2 marathons a day for 111 consecutive days without taking a day off. Burned a lot of calories and only had 2 showers in 111 days, so just be glad you weren't there. And so it was quite an experience. We crossed Senegal, Mauritania, Mali, Niger, Libya, and Egypt. And while the physical aspect is self-explanatory, it was hard. The lasting legacy of this thing was that Matt Damon and I created a foundation called H2O Africa, which today many of you would know as water.org. So water.org is the world's largest clean water nonprofit. We passed $1.2 billion in funding last year. And it has grown out of this crazy idea that running across the Sahara Desert could be impactful or meaningful. I just wanted to see if I could do it. You know, I mean, seriously, that is all that I cared about, was to see if I could do it. So running the Sahara put me on the map. I was on Jay Leno, I was on all the morning shows, I got to do NPR, I got to do all these cool things, a lot of speaking gigs all over the world. But not all of the attention that I received was positive. A couple of years later, I was coming home after running errands around my house, and I pulled into the parking lot of my apartment building, and 6 armed federal agents came out of the coffee shop in my building, and they handcuffed me, and they put me in a police car. And at this point, I was 19 years clean and sober, and they put me in the back, and they took me to jail, and I stayed there overnight, not knowing what I was there for. And I would come to find out that a single IRS agent had decided that running the Sahara wasn't all that impressive, and he wanted to see, you know, how, in his opinion, I paid for it. And without boring you with all the details, I became the only person in the United States to be charged with allegedly overstating my income on a home loan application from 2005. And for that, I could be sentenced to 20 years in federal prison. So I fought the charges. I had a week-long trial. I was found not guilty of providing false information on a loan application, but guilty of mail fraud because I signed a closing package, unbeknownst to me, that contained false information, put it in the mail, and it didn't matter whether I knew it or not. And I was sentenced to 21 months in federal prison. And on February 14th, Valentine's Day, 2011, I reported to Beckley Federal Correctional Institute in Beckley, West Virginia. And my 2 teenage sons dropped me off. Not the best day ever. And Needless to say, everything was gone. No more sponsors, no more speaking gigs, no more anything. I was booted off the board of the two nonprofits that I founded. I was basically erased from my own life. And I got there and I was angry. You know, I was pissed off and I was scared. And I remember that first night not knowing how I was possibly going to get through this. And I was so angry that I realized that I couldn't get through it this way. Like, fair or unfair didn't matter anymore. I was in prison, and that was not going to change, so I had to figure out who I was going to be in this situation. So I got up the next day, and I ran. And I started running every single day. I ran in the rec yard every day that I could, and if we were on lockdown, I ran in my cell, sometimes for 6 hours at a time, in place. People thought I was actually a little crazy, which actually in federal prison isn't a bad thing, in case any of you ever decide to go. So I started teaching addiction recovery classes, and because there is no addiction recovery in federal prison, despite the fact that 85% of the people that are there for some sort of drug-related charge, that's a story for another day. But slowly but surely, people started to come up to me and ask me, hey, could you show me how to run? Could you help me on a fitness program? Could you? And it was what I call the law of attraction rather than promotion. If you just live your life and you do the things that you're passionate about, that you love doing, people, the right people, will be attracted to that and they will ask you about it. You don't have to proselytize. They will come up to you and they are the right people. So when I got to Beckley Federal Correctional Institute, there were three runners basically on that track every single day. It was a little like goat path around the rec yard. By the time I left 18 months later, I had a running group of 50 guys and we were running every single day. The most dubious thing that I ever did there was I started doing yoga on the softball field by myself. By the way, I also do not recommend that for any of you who decide to go to federal prison. But I got a lot of heckling. But by the time I left prison, I had 25 guys doing yoga with me 3 days a week. You know, it's about putting it out there and people will come to it. So when I left there, I had so many guys. I had 11 guys that lost more than 100 pounds while I was there. And they came up to me and they thanked me for what I did for them. And what they didn't understand is the old saying, to keep it, you have to give it away. They are the ones who got me through that experience by allowing me the opportunity to give the thing that I had to give in that circumstance. They helped me get through that situation. So I left Beckley. Oh yeah, there's a picture of me running in prison. And actually, it's quite funny because you see, I was the fifth person to own that pair of Nikes. Cotton socks, those were cut-off sweatpants, you know, cotton, everything. Like, I didn't need any fancy high-tech gear. And, you know, I ran every single day in there. So it's not about the gear. It's not about any of that. It's about the attitude. It's about no matter what happens, you have a chance to get up every single day and do it again. So I got out, as you can see. And I did, again, what I always do. I started running because that's my way to relate to the world. And so I went to Ecuador, and I did a big race across the mountains in Ecuador. And I did a run 2015 called the Icebreaker Run. I had six recovering drug addicts, and we ran 24 hours a day for 24 days from Los Angeles to Washington, D.C., in order to bring attention to the need for better mental health services so that we in the United States stop putting drug addicts in prison because it's not where they belong. And I began to reclaim my life. And I also started to think about my next and biggest adventure ever. Everybody in this room, especially me, you go through this lifelong roller coaster of lows and highs. It's theoretical. In my case, I decided that I wanted to actually put some meat on the bones. And so I wanted to do an actual adventure from the lowest place on the planet to the highest point on the planet. So I am going to go from the Dead Sea in Jordan, and I'm going to swim into the Dead Sea and do a free dive to the deepest point that I can reach. I'm going to come back up, hopefully, and swim back to shore, dry off, and I'm going to run across the entire Arabian Desert. And when I get to the tip of Oman, I'm going to get into a kayak and paddle about 1,000 miles across the Indian Ocean to Mumbai, India. And when I get to Mumbai, I'm going to mountain bike to Nepal, to the base of Mount Everest, and then I'm going to climb to the top of Mount Everest, where I'm going to pour out a flask of water that I've carried with me from the Dead Sea to join the two ends of the earth. And here's a little bit of what that's going to look like.
Throw roses into the abyss and say, here is my thanks to the monster who didn't succeed in swallowing me alive. I've always done things the hard way. The easy way just isn't interesting to me. I was an addict. I spent 18 months in federal prison, divorced, remarried, fallen in love, raised a family, cheated death. But I've never done anything like this before. People ask me, why are you doing this? I ache for this.
Who wants to go with me? So this adventure actually begins a month and a half from now. Not this one. I'm actually going to go not just the lowest to highest in the world. I'm actually going to do this on all seven continents. So the very first one is Africa, 5.8 Africa. I call this adventure 5.8, by the way, because even though it's about 4,500 miles from the lowest point to the highest place in the world, it's actually only 5.8 vertical miles. So we all live, everybody in this room is from all over the planet right now, yet we all live in this tiny little 5.8 mile sliver of atmosphere that surrounds the planet. We are in it together already. Like, there's actually no choice. You're in it whether you want to be or not. So in Africa, I'll go from the lowest place in Africa to the top of Kilimanjaro, and I'll do that same thing on all seven continents. And about a year and a half from now is when I'll start the Dead Sea to Everest. And in conjunction with the launch of this expedition, later this month in New York City, I'm launching my next nonprofit, which is called green.org. And in short, it's going to be a very tech-heavy nonprofit that focuses on, it takes a lot of my previous relationships in water.org and focuses technology on partnering with nonprofits that are pre-existing in the places where I'm going to be traveling through, in particular, to begin with, and try to help them solve the problems, because the problems are different in Africa and South America and the U.S. I mean, they're similar, but they're different. And so this expedition begins soon. I'm going to do, we have workshops going on later today, so I have no idea what I'm going to talk about in my workshop, so come in there at your own risk. I may ask you hard questions if you decide to come, but the adventure begins soon, and I will just remind you one final time, it simply doesn't matter what happens to us. It only matters what you do about it. Thank you.
The Do Lectures is here to share stories of remarkable people in the hope they will inspire you to go and do amazing things too. There are over 300 talks to listen to, or if you prefer, watch on our website, thedolectures.com. Hit the subscribe button on your favorite podcast platform to get the latest episodes when they come out.